You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. From Aldo Leopold to John Muir, Wisconsin has a long history of being on the forefront of environmental and conservation issues. Our next guest book profiles eight conservationists who overcame great odds to bring about big changes in the way we look at the natural world around us.
Larry A. Nielsen joins us now. He's a professor of natural resources at North Carolina State University and the author of the book Nature's Allies, Eight Conservationists Who Changed Our World. Larry, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much, Veronica. Happy to be here.
Well, Larry, it sounds like you were kind of looking at a profiles in courage style book with this, only you wanted to look specifically at conservationists. Where did that idea come from?
Well, when I was a boy, I read John Kennedy's book, Profiles in Courage, and I was inspired by it at the time. And as I matured in my profession here as a professor of natural resources, I thought it would be a wonderful thing to bring the stories of great conservationists to other people in a way that was accessible, like Profiles in Courage was accessible.
And your book begins with a look at John Muir, who had some roots here in Wisconsin. I mean, he was a kind of a guy who lived a little bit all over the place, including his childhood. But tell us a little bit about that time in Wisconsin.
Yeah, his formative years were really occurred in Wisconsin. He was born in Scotland, but came with his father to create a farm near Portage, Wisconsin, when he was 12. And he loved the Wisconsin wilderness. He thought it was beautiful and inspiring. And it's where he grew strong and grew to be a man, and eventually spent a couple years at the University of Wisconsin studying science before he decided that it was time to take a big walk to Florida and then get on a boat and head to California.
I love how you say a big walk, but it's to Florida. That's way beyond most people's idea of a big walk. I mean, what did he do during that first walk down to Florida?
Well, he loved to walk. He walked to Canada. He walked back from Canada. He walked to and from Wisconsin and Indiana. And he decided that he was on his way to South America to relive some of the adventures of the great explorers of the previous century. But, you know, he didn't really want to be around people, so he said, I'm not going to get on a train or anything like that. I'm just going to walk, and I'm going to go by the most wildest, as he said, wildest, leafiest, peopleless track I can find. And, you know, he walked fast, too. He did about 20 miles a day all the way down to Florida.
And so how did he end up at Yosemite? It sounds like he was aiming for South America, but he doesn't end up there.
No, and that's really not explained ever by him or by his, more intense biographers. But he did make the decision to head to Yosemite. He'd learned about California from a friend and decided that that was a place to go. And when he got off the boat in San Francisco, guess what? He started walking again, walked west into the Sierra Nevadas and fell in love with them. And from then on, Yosemite and that part of California, San Francisco, was his home.
It sounds like he was really fearless in a way, too, and he understood the natural world. He was able to then relay his knowledge. He took careful stock of it, but he also really lived in it. You tell this story about how he went up into a tree during this huge windstorm when everybody else was looking for cover. He climbed a tree.
Yeah, it's a great story, actually. And you're exactly right. There was a big storm coming. Everyone was running for cover. And he said, you know, this is a great opportunity for me to figure out what a tree feels like in a storm. Climbed to the top, lashed himself up there for hours, and thoroughly enjoyed the experience. And he did that in location after location, all different sorts of things. Great adventures, climbing waterfalls, climbing mountains, walking on glaciers. He was a guy who, I tell you, nothing bothered him. He could be cold, he could be hungry, he could, you know, he just didn't care. That Wisconsin upbringing made him tough.
And he studied the natural world. He didn't have, you know, a degree, but he did study. He looked at what he thought were glaciers, which may have carved some of the canyons and the valleys out in Yosemite. How did he relate what he found and make the case, use what he found to make the case for preserving that area?
Well, that's really how he got started. He observed glaciers and the actions of glaciers in those mountains and decided that he would write a letter to the New York Herald, a newspaper in, you know, big newspaper in New York City. And his letter was published, and he was really taking on the established view of how canyons like Yosemite Valley were formed. And that got him a lot of attention, and people liked the way he wrote, and so he kept on writing. But then, as he matured, he realized that the natural world that he liked was also in danger of being overused and inappropriately used, and began to work extensively for conservation, and in specific, mounted this a campaign to get Yosemite National Park formed, and very successfully.
And what is your takeaway from his life? I mean, he was hugely influential. He founded the Sierra Club. What do you think the big lessons are that we can take away from his life and what he did?
Well, I think the lessons from all eight of the people that I profiled in the book are pretty much the same. Two huge things. One is having your passion and living that passion, as John Muir did. The other is to be persistent. You know, in anything in life, I think, but certainly in the conservation world, nature pays attention to long-term trends, not things that happen just once or today and then change tomorrow. So he persevered throughout his whole life, being committed to the conservation ethic. And I would add a third thing, too, that we now know about conservation is that you usually don't do something just by yourself. You have to have partners. You have to be part of a bigger mission, a bigger group of people. And John Muir, although people tend to think of him as a hermit who didn't like people, had a really strong partner, Robert Underwood Johnson, that worked with him to secure Yosemite National Park. And most of us have needed good partners to make it through successful life.
Well, I want to talk about another conservationist profiled in your book with even deeper, stronger ties here in Wisconsin, Aldo Leopold. Start us off. What do we need to know about Aldo Leopold?
Well, unlike Muir, who was raised in Wisconsin and then left, Aldo Leopold was someone who came to Wisconsin as a professional. He worked for the U.S. Forest Service, first out west in New Mexico, and then eventually came to Madison and worked at the Forest Products Lab that still exists and still is a big part of the Forest Service's work in the country. Then he got tired of that and decided that he would try something new, and he got an opportunity at the University of Wisconsin, just like many great ideas started at the University of Wisconsin. They employed him as the first professor of wildlife management in the country. And from that start, he became really the leader of the growth of the wildlife profession and is considered to be the father of wildlife management, just like John Muir is considered to be the father of conservation overall in the United States.
And you're right about how minutely Aldo Leopold could read the natural world around him. He recorded it faithfully to the song of a lark at a particular time. What made him so good at that, at reading the world around him, the natural world around him?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how he got that way, but boy, was he good at it. It was said that he could pick up a handful of soil and describe for you the history of that piece of land and what its good intentions might be for the future. I think he was a great observer of nature and relished the idea to be quiet in nature and to see what was happening around him at any time. And, of course, that's the origin for the book that has made him especially famous, A Sand County Almanac, where he describes what happens over a year on this small farm that he restored in just west of Madison.
And what came out of that book? What emerged as sort of that conservation ethic?
Interestingly, the book was published in 1949, just after his death, and it really didn't have much of an impact then. People thought they were some nice nature stories. But when it was reissued in 1970 in a paperback version and was at the height, really, of the growth of the environmental movement in the United States, people read it and saw there that there was something much bigger, much deeper, much more important. They were nature stories, of course, but there was something in there that talked about the essential relationship between humans and their use of the environment and our ability to sustain that through time. And this conservation ethic that Aldo Leopold talked about in the book, that we should learn how to live in a place without spoiling it, is really the basis of the whole idea of sustainability that we are so concerned about today.
So we've talked about just a couple of the conservationists profiled in your book. There are eight of them. But looking forward instead of backward now, do you see young people coming up in conservation that you think have this persistence and this passion to make big changes like these other people did?
One of the joys of my job is that I deal with students who are passionate about conservation, are passionate about our environment every day. And I'm very much encouraged that today's set of students are even more committed and more capable of making the positive changes that we've seen over the last century. So surely I do. I see them every day. People come to talk to me, or I see them in class, or they're former students that I'm still in contact with that inspire me with their passion and their commitment.
Larry, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Veronica.
That was Larry A. Nielsen, Professor of Natural Resources at North Carolina State University. He's the author of the new book, Nature's Allies, Eight Conservationists Who Changed Our World.